This is the best of RSN Central, so thanks for listening. And don't forget to join us from Monday to Friday on RSN 927 from 10:30 to 1. And if you miss anything from RSN Central, head to our website at rsn.net.au or subscribe to RSN Central on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio.
RSN Central, brought to you by TAB. Long may we play. Gamble responsibly. Gamblers Help, 1-800-858-858.
One man that I know will have an opinion on this is Fox Sports' very own, and these days he's RSN Central's very own, Jules Destoop. Good morning to you, Jules.
Morning, Gareth. How are we?
I'm very well. I'm thinking Patton from the Hawthorn Football Club from the Giants will be the best recruit in 2020. That's my prediction.
Don't mind it. Yeah, and yeah. It looked good last night. He did. Certainly looks like he's trimmed down. And look, he hasn't played footy for about 18 months, nearly 2 years. So I don't think we can expect too much too early. Look, it's a really good question. It's a hard question to answer. Obviously, we saw a few on show last night for the Saints. Look, I think we know Brad Hill is going to be a good player. And you throw in Zach Jones as well and a bit more Gresham in the midfield for the Saints, and they're going to have a lot more leg speed. Look, I think the Dolphins have recruited really well for what they need in Josh Bruce and Alex Keith. But I think the one that will turn out to be the recruit of the year for what this club needs, for what they gave up to get him, which was a future fourth-round selection, is Sam Jacobs going to the Giants. Because if you watched late in the season last year, Shane Mumford looked pretty banged up. I'm not sure how much football Shane Mumford's got left in him. And look, Sam Jacobs, apart from a bit of a knee injury he had early last year, has been a very durable player. And it was only 2 years ago, or 2017, he was one of the best ruckmen in the competition. So I think for what the Giants need, I think Sam Jacobs is a really good pickup. I think he'll play more footy than Shane Mumford this year. And I think he'll be a very important part of that that puzzle up there as they look to go one step better than they did last year. So, yeah, there's some good players to look out for. But for mine, I think Jacobs might turn out to be the best value.
Sam was nearly an All-Australian in his late 20s. And then when he approached 30, he was injured. And then he really couldn't get a game for the Adelaide Football Club last year. So that's a big call, Jules. But we did have Phil Davis on RSN Central on Wednesday morning, and he predicted that Sam Jacobs will be having a big season. So you might be right on the money. I think Bradley Hill's a big pickup for the St Kilda Football Club.
Huge.
Talking about a football club, yeah, that needs a player to really fit their system. He is a player that can deliver some leg speed, outside speed to that football club. And I think he's a gun. He was superb there for the Fremantle Football Club last year. And he's a leader too these days. So I think he's a big recruit. Mikey Velasaris, the Carlton supporter, believes Jack Martin, Jules, will be the recruit of the year.
Well, it could be. I like Jack Martin. I think he's a good player. And unfortunately, we didn't see him yesterday in this little hit out that they had at Princes Park yesterday. But I like Martin. I think he'll turn into a very, very good player for Carlton. I know he's been sporadic in his time at the Suns, but look, he's played a lot of half forward in a pretty ordinary side. I think he can play midfield. I reckon he's tough. I reckon he's skillful. He can take a mark. So, I think he'll be a very, very good player for the Blues.
Now, you can't get carried away with the first practice match of the season.
No, you can't. But people do.
Yeah, they do. And I don't mind that. Football's such a big part of our lives here, especially here in Victoria and Tasmania. And we do get excited. It's been a long, long wait. It's a long summer. But Eddie Betts, first of all, at the Carlton Football Club, did he show enough to get you excited?
He was good. He was very good. And we spoke about this on the Hacks the other day, didn't we? That we thought he could have a good year. There'll be some crumbs there to get at Carlton. And look, in the first half that I saw yesterday of the practice match against Collingwood, I mean, as you say, it's a practice match. The Pies probably had 11 of their best 22 not playing. But he was playing on Isaac Quayner, who's a player that Collingwood rate really highly. And Eddie was excellent. Couple of goals, missed a couple of others, set another couple of up. So I think he's going to be a pretty handy player for the Blues. Yesterday, obviously, there was no Charlie Curnow. There was no Harry Mackay. Levi Casbolt went back forward and did some nice things, and he'll provide plenty of crumbs for Eddie. So, and the other great thing out of that game was that Sam Doherty got through unscathed. So flop to like for the Blues yesterday. Tom. And but no doubt that Eddie kicking goals at Princess Park certainly got everyone up and about.
Tom Mitchell, his performance there yesterday was pretty good. Do you think he can play some good football that will see him? He probably won't be able to reach the heights that he did a couple of seasons back, but will he be a player that can help Hawthorn get back into the finals?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, no, I don't think it'll take too long for Tom Mitchell, to be honest. The way he plays, he's very much an accumulator. He's in and under. He doesn't rely on leg speed or amazing agility. So I think the fact that he's coming back from a serious leg injury, the way he plays, it won't take him too long. As you said after the game last night, he felt like his touch was a bit off, which you would expect in his first game for nearly 18 months now. But no, it's a massive, I mean, stating the obvious, but it's a massive inclusion. I mean, 600 possessions he had the year before. So you add that back into your midfield, he'll make O'Meara a better player. He'll make Warple a better player. So he's big. And I like what the Hawks have done off-season as well. I think Frost from Melbourne's a good acquisition from them. He can really lock down on a player, which allows, frees up Sicily even more. He didn't play last night. And look, they're going to go big up forward, which is, you know, once they decided last year that Roughhead wasn't part of the plan, they decided to get games into Mitchell Lewis. They got games into O'Brien later in the year. Now they're throwing Patton in. And they're pretty determined to go with those three big boys up front. So it's an interesting forward setup. Gunston will come back into that side as well. So I think there's a lot to like for Hawks fans as well. And for mine, I think they're the team from outside the eight that will jump back into the finals this year.
I'm with St Kilda. I think they will be the big movers in 2020. But I guess that's why this season's so exciting. There's so many unknowns. It'll be a side that no doubt will surprise a few and move up the ladder. And there will be a disappointment in 2020. There always is. And
every year. Every year.
And there was an interesting tweet. I know you made a comment on that during the week. I think the four sides were Geelong, GWS...
Yes.
And there was two other sides.
The Bulldogs.
And one side out of that four will probably won't make the top eight. Which side?
Well, history says that'll be the case. I mean, there's normally two changes on average, and there's always a side that pretty much comes from the bottom four or bottom six to make the top four. I mean, it happened with Brisbane last year. So I'm not sure which one of those sides will miss. Look, I think you won't agree with this, but I think out of those four, my biggest concern would be the Lions. I just think the Lions, they've got a much tougher draw. History says they won't have as good a run with injury as they did last year. They'll be much more hunted this year, given teams have had a really good look at them. So I think out of those four, they would be the most vulnerable out of the four that you mentioned there. But there's so much to play out. Injuries play such a part. But if I just had to say one of those four, I would say the Lions right now.
If the Lions don't beat the Bulldogs this season and finish high on the ladder, I will...
Oh, here we go.
I don't know. I'll do something outrageous because it simply won't happen. I'm trying to think. Maybe I'll put on a barbecue for our listeners on a Friday morning with free coffee.
Well, there you go. That's a good deal.
Yeah, we'll do an OB somewhere. So no, nice. We'll do an OB at a local cafe here in Melbourne, or I'll put on breakfast. There you go.
So Lions finish higher than the Dogs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because they've got too many A-grade players, the Lions. Like, the Doggies have got some young players on the up. Bontempelli, yes, but I don't think... And plus, the Lions do have a home ground advantage. Yeah. It's big. So
You make some good arguments.
Got the best centre-half back in the competition. I think they've got some nice, young, progressive forwards. Their midfield's superb. I think Sorko's A-grade. I think Lockie Neal's definitely B-plus towards A-grade.
Martin's a good ruckman. They tick a lot of boxes.
And they will improve, I think, from last year.
Well, they're going to have to go out to improve because they were a very good side last year.
Hey, Jules, enjoy the rest of your day. What's planned for a journey from Fox Sports on a day like this?
I might trek out to Casey this afternoon. So there's a bit of a practice game between Melbourne and Essendon. Now, Melbourne, there won't be many senior listed players playing because they're playing tomorrow out there at Casey against the Crows. But the Bombers have got a few going around, so I might have a look at that. I love going to look at these practice games against the club. You just pick up little things here and there. So I might trek out there to beautiful Casey this afternoon and have a look at that game.
you might be able to find one for your Supercoach side. Just a sneaky.
I hope so. Yeah. I'm not very good at Supercoach, Gareth. So if you've got any pointers, I'd be happy to take them.
Yeah, well, I'm not very good at it either, so that's why I don't participate in it. Anyway, Jules, thanks for that.
Have a good weekend, mate.
RSN Central, brought to you by TAB. Long may we play. Gamble responsibly. Gamblers Help, 1-800-858-858.
Alligator Blood lets down now. Catalyst is sticking with him, and they were followed by Chenier. Alligator Blood at the 200 metres, about a neck in front. Catalyst on the outside is sticking with him. Alligator Blood at the 100. Catalyst digs in. They're stride for stride. Alligator Blood and Catalyst. Alligator Blood just in front and just won. Alligator Blood has...
It's 6 days since that wonderful duel up that Flemington Straight in the CSA Stakes, and we're still talking about the Alligator Blood and Catalyst fight up that Flemington Straight. Of course, they'll meet once again in the Australian Guineas and then hopefully on towards the All-Star Mile. Now, it was revealed the top 10 from the votes for the All-Star Mile there yesterday at Caulfield, and leading the way was the people's horse, the horse from Queensland, Alligator Blood. Part owner Alan Andres joins us now, and yesterday he announced that one lucky person who voted for Alligator Blood in the All-Star Mile will get a chance to own 5% of the Queensland Star for that $5 million race there at Caulfield in the middle part of March. And Alan joins us now here on RSN Central. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Gareth. How are you going?
Good, thanks, mate. What about that? First of all, your horse is now you could say, the most popular horse in this country. How does that make you feel?
Oh, fantastic, Gareth. And I tell you, just listening to that race again for the 302nd time, that's never going to go away from me, I can assure you. It's awesome.
How has he pulled up? Because David Van Dyke told us earlier on in the week that he was a little bit tired after that performance there on Saturday, but has he bounced back as the week has gone on?
Yeah, absolutely. He was tired. David confirmed that, and I was with him yesterday, and I've had news this morning. David's back down at the stables this morning, and it confirmed everything I'd seen yesterday. He's bounced back. His coat looks fantastic, eating well, and we just can't wait to see him now on Saturday week.
Alan, does he become a horse that you have to share with the public now? Is he I think to a few of us, he feels like he's our horse in a way, because he's loved by so many.
Oh, absolutely. Uncle Jeff and Auntie Robin, myself, we'd made a conscious decision some time ago. I was trying to share him with the public in his first race, believe it or not. People thought I was nuts, but he's on.
We just lost you there, Al. You there? Yep. You're back? Sorry.
Yeah, back. Sorry, Gareth. You can hear me?
Yep. Go on, mate.
He's definitely been—he's a public horse now, and we just happen to be owners that have a vested interest in him, and we're delighted that everybody's embracing it.
So, when did you come up with the decision to give away 5% of Alligator Blood for the All-Star Mile?
Look, we talked about it, how we were going to handle the votes. We wanted him in the race, and we looked at other options that were happening, that people were giving things away at the time, and we made a conscious decision to say, look, let's just run it with the public. Let's just see if he can stand alone. There's only three of us in the syndicate. So, we've got our family and friends. And if we get in, no matter what level he was going to fall in, if that was the case, we'd certainly want to offer it as a reward. So we've made that, in the lead-up prior to the voting starting, really, I guess.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, it's just been an absolute delight that, the support came in, and we want to now... give that lucky person and their family the opportunity to become owners for the day. And, they may not like putting up with us as owners anyway on the day. They might be sick of us, but...
it'll be a lot of fun, Al. I can guarantee that. You'll have to dress up in green. There's no doubt about that. That would have to be one of the priorities if you do get selected.
Oh, look, the alligator theme, to be there on the day, And I hope they experience what Jeff, Robin and I do, and that is that we just enjoy the horse racing, and, win or lose, it's about that experience, and just to don't get too wound up with if he doesn't win. It's a case of enjoying the moment and accepting the fact that there's some spectacular 3-year-olds coming through the ranks.
Did you ever imagine how powerful owning a racehorse could be, and the journey and the journey that this horse has taken you on. And I know Arnie Robin is and there's an illness within the ownership group, battling cancer at the moment. This horse, Alligator Blood, is giving everyone some hope and inspiring for you guys to go on.
Yeah, look, I think my interest is in Uncle Jeff as well. My grandfather, Jeff's father, Pop, he lived for 99 years and 6 months, about 4 or 5 years ago now. But, you know, he was always showing us a memorable day in Randwick where Belmont Park won the first horse ever to win a double on the same day, which you'd never see that today. And that sort of stuck in my mind. And I've enjoyed the racing in the 80s and 90s. You know, I've loved the superstars that we've seen, and still do with the mares as well, Winx and Maccabi Diva and so on. But I had a taste of it with a good friend, Brad Spicer from Spicer Thoroughbreds, got me involved in 2008 in a syndicate. And, you know, their very first horse was a horse called Fernandina, and it won the Vane Stakes and Caulfield Prelude and so on. Was sold, and I thought, gee, this is easy money, but, you know, many, many horses later and you get the bug, it's very addictive. Mm-hmm. And then there was something about this guy, Jeff and I and Robin, he was passed in, we negotiated with Jerry, and that's a strong word, Jerry, you don't negotiate with Jerry. So yeah. Thank goodness we paid the GST. and there was something about this guy, and that was one of the names we wanted to name one of the horses, and it turns out that it resonates with Al and everybody for a whole raft of reasons, yeah. You know, the personal issues and so on.
Hey, Al, when do you make the decision, when does the draw happen regarding who is that lucky owner to win 5% of Alligator Blood?
Yeah, we're running that pretty quick. I've been talking to, Racing Victoria about the database, and, you know, you've got to be conscious of privacy issues there and legal aspects, but we'll be able to put that together so that people can come to us with their phone details. We can match that up to make sure that they were legitimate voters. That's the key, that you know, the 18,500. But I'm hoping, early, late next week, and that lucky person and their family can come for the ride with the three of us.
Yeah, I think I think it's terrific, and that will be some ride to have 5% of Alligator Blood in the richest mile race in the world. It will be something you would tell your mates at the pub. And maybe get a few tickets for them as well.
The feedback's been great because people desperately want to be part of that journey. So yeah. We're really grateful and thankful to everybody.
Good luck, Al.
Thanks, Gareth. Appreciate that.
RSM Central, brought to you by TAB. Long may we play. Gamble responsibly. Gambler's Help, 1-800-858-858.
This man who we're about to interview, for me, he's an inspiration. He's recovering from a serious illness. He had a brain aneurysm towards the end of last year, but now he is back training, and training really well. He's got two chances in a Group 1 race on a magical day at Caulfield tomorrow, and he's also the boss of the Trainers Association. It's been quite a remarkable comeback by Robbie Griffiths, and he joins us now here on RSN Central. Good morning to you, Robbie.
Morning, Gary.
First of all, how are you?
I'm feeling really strong and excited about tomorrow, and loving every bit of it.
Have you exceeded your expectations or your belief how you would actually come back from that brain aneurysm?
Definitely. I think the surgeons tweaked me up a bit and improved the model, got the functions going really well, and it's so nice not having headaches all the time, you know. Yeah. It's actually really enjoyable to do your day-to-day duties without the headaches I was getting. So I'm actually, really reinvigorated and excited about sort of doing what I love doing, you know.
So serious to have a brain aneurysm, but I think you're telling us now is that it could be the best thing that's ever happened to you in a way.
Well, in some ways, yeah. I mean, nobody likes any sort of health scare like that, but you know, the fact that they found it was such a massive bonus, because the alternative is extremely negative. And and most people unfortunately find out the hard way through dying from them. So I was very, very lucky. And the one thing I have noticed since returning to work is that it's so enjoyable to not have all the headaches that I was getting before. And I didn't realise how much it was sort of dragging me down. And And now I'm sort of got so much more energy and enjoying what I do every day. It's just been fantastic.
It's quite amazing, really, hearing you say that. Has it changed your life in a way from a different perspective? Like when you're a horse trainer and you're so busy looking after owners, also you're the boss of the Trainers Association, that you're just going flat out basically from 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning until I would imagine you put your head on that pillow. But has it changed the way now that you think about life?
Oh, definitely it does. I mean, there's without a doubt, you've got to, I think all trainers, you know, struggle with that work-life balance and how to get it correct. And you know, I'm not saying I've got it down pat yet, but it certainly changes your perspective because, you know, if you just, participant welfare is a big ticket item at the moment that we're all discussing. And I think that you've got to be careful that you don't just work, and then, you know, work yourself to an early grave, you know. So I think that work-life balance rolls off the tongue really easy. And in the seven-day racing, you've got to be careful that you don't get that imbalance. But I think when you have a health issue like I've had to endure in my family, I think it certainly changes your outlook on things. And somewhere along the line, you know, if I'm not happy with the work-life balance, I might, you know, downscale or take on a partner or do the sort of things you do to make sure that you do get that work-life balance so that you can enjoy what you love doing and be really good at it and also enjoy your family time as well so that you've got that the best of both worlds, which is what everyone tries to achieve.
Do you think sometimes in life, and this just doesn't necessarily mean trainers or people involved in the racing industry, this could be to anyone that's listening to RSN Central this morning, that sometimes we think that because you need to keep on working to make sure you earn the money and you get scared if you actually sit back and take a day off or take a couple of days off, that actually if you do get that balance right, that you'd be a lot more efficient in your job anyway?
Oh, 100%. And I think that's what, you know, that's what I've sort of realised, that in my absence, my staff did a fantastic job and we continue to train winners. And since I've been back, it's been going fantastic. So you can do it. And I think that I think you're better. You're certainly a better person at your job, whether you're a trainer or whatever industry you're in, if you're not screwed down to work 7 days a week and be really hard at it all the time. Nobody minds, you know, the harder you work, the luckier you get. And I think, you know, a lot of my, you know, training colleagues work very hard, and we all do in the industry. So I think that we all appreciate that. But there's certainly, I certainly think if you can get that balance right, you're going to be a lot better for it. And I think that's the thing that I've sort of seen and had first-hand experience with. And that's what I think all of us in the industry have to strive towards doing for sure.
Geez, it'd be great if you could win a Group 1 tomorrow, and you've got two chances. Glenfiddich goes around, of course, in the Blue Diamond, his son of Fastnet Rock. Can he turn the tables on a horse like Hanseatic that he's finished behind his last couple of starts?
On form, you'd say not. Hanseatic looks one out of the box. He's just been the dominant two-year-old in every time he's contested a race. But we've got the right guy on board to do it. Bossy has an unbelievable knack of just winning at the highest level all the time. He does it year in, year out, and he did it on this guy's father, Fastnet Rock. So that's a great connection. Our horse is a really strong horse. He was very good running second to Hanseatic when returning this preparation, and I thought his stiff was really creditable. Brett Preble was quite impressed with his run. So I'm hoping we've got the ingredients to do it. He's got the pedigree, the strength, he's worked well. He'll appreciate the 1,200 better than the 1,011 that he's been running in. And he's got the right guy on top. So, you know, we're going there as bullish as you can be against a short price favourite like Hanseatic.
Now, Robbie, Halvorsen could be the horse that finishes over the top of them in the Oakley Plate. Is that how you see it? Is he in good enough form to win a Group 1?
Well, we're hoping for that. He's certainly in the right form. You know, his form line's been very strong. You know, he's up another level again. It was great to see Guitra win the Lightning because we ran so close to him as a three-year-old. And I'm hoping that we've made the necessary improvement during our development time frame, the same as Gitra did. The opening plate, it's a race of fractions and everything has to go well. It's over and done with so quickly in under 1-3 and next minute, you know, the race has been and run. So the fractions do need to go your way. He's drawn beautifully. He doesn't use the barrier in the sense that he doesn't take a forward spot, but he should get a pretty cheap first half. And if Bing Yendul can have a bit of luck in navigating a path the second half of the race, I think he's got the right form with a minimal weight to certainly be one of the key chances.
Now, Robbie, you got some nice chances there at the Valley tonight. What's your best there?
Cantel the Boss is a really good filly. She is a backmarker, and she probably has the wrong ingredients when the rail's at 5 metres around the Valley. But just on sheer talent, she has the ability to win. I just hope the track's playing fair because it can, just with the structure and nature of the rail out, it can favour horses in key spots. And if that's the case, she's probably going to run on and be a black booker to follow. But she worked beautifully Monday morning. She's ran very well at the Valley, running fourth up behind Loving Gabby, and that form being frank throughout her run. The Caulfield run after that was very good. So she certainly has the right equipment to measure up, and we just need a bit of luck in running.
Robbie, you're an inspiration. You keep on doing what you're doing, and geez, it would be one hell of a story if you can win a big Group 1 there tomorrow at Caulfield. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys. We'll be doing our best.
RSM Central, brought to you by TAB. Long may we play. Gamble responsibly. Gambler's Help, 1-800-858-858.
And Matty Never joins us now for the sports update. Hello to you, Matty.
Oh, hello, Gareth. How are you?
Good, thank you. It would be great if Robbie Griffiths could win a big Group 1 there tomorrow.
Oh, what a story. It would be almost the story of the year, I think, Gareth. I think Hal Vorson's got a decent shot there on the Oakley Plate too.
There'll be a little bit of pace on big field handicap in a sprint Group 1 race there at Caulfield. Nice draw.
Set up, I reckon.
Yeah, Yendul.
Race was set up nicely.
Just sits behind them, weaves his way through and goes bang. Yeah. Conversation started today. Who will be the best recruit in the AFL in 2020? Now, I couldn't believe the first SMS that came through. Ed Langdon will improve Melbourne's outside run. Big line breaking plays. Now, if Ed Langdon was in a boat in the middle of the harbour, he wouldn't hit the water.
That's hot, coming through hot on the text machine, and a number of people have sent that through, Gareth.
Ed Langdon.
I think he could be the X factor on the wing that the Demons need.
Can't kick.
But he can run.
Doesn't matter.
That's what they need.
He's a good man, Ed Langdon. I remember watching him a few times last year at Optus Stadium. In fact, he'd be running too quick. He'd missed the football when he stabbed his toe.
That's a bit harsh.
No, that's true. He'd done it two times in one game.
Bit of turf toe action.
He was like you in the heyday when you were a kid. Oh, you're a kid still, Hornet, but when you used to go out and you were single and you used to go to all the girls in the nightclub, that's how when he kicks it, it's like he just hopes that he hits a target.
I didn't miss, son.
Oh, please.
Hey, Gareth, in terms of who would be, who is a great recruit, now I don't know if you'd call him a recruit for the D's, but Aaron Vandenberg hasn't played footy in over 12 months. He's selected tomorrow in Melbourne's practice match against Adelaide. Wonderful story. He's had a number of issues with his feet. He's only played 30-odd games in about 7 or 8 years of footy. Serious talent.
Yep.
Deserves a crack at it. Works harder than anyone else in the league. Can't wait to see him play for the D's tomorrow. He could be a real big pickup for us.
Do you agree with me about, this is from Tony, hey Rockstar G, sign me up for that coffee and breakfast. Like, the Dogs won't finish higher than the Lions.
Oh, I think that's 50-50. That's a genuine 50-50.
They've got a lot of potential, the Doggies, but even though they've got some serious forward talent, they're still really young.
They're both around that 4-8 mark, aren't they?
Yep. Mm. Mm. Tim Kelly Easley from one of our listeners. Yes. He'll be a star for the West Coast Eagles.
Quite forgotten about, too, because he's gone west, I think. So he's gone from being in the papers every single day to not being in them at all.
The only problem with saying that about Kelly is that he'll move into a star-studded midfield anyway. So
doesn't that make you a better player sometimes?
It does, but it also, he might not need to do as much as he did, say, at Geelong, even though they had a pretty good midfield. Yeah. Mm. So it'd be interesting to see how he goes. What about Roger? Roger Federer, he's sore and he's hurt, isn't he?
He's out for a while, Gareth. This is a bit of a worry when you're a 38-year-old. He's had a knee arthroscope, so He's going to miss probably the next 4 or 5 months of action. He's hoping to be back for Wimbledon in the middle of the year, but he's ruled himself right out of Indian Wells, Miami, and the French Open, obviously. I think it's time. It's coming. The retirement is certainly coming for Roger, and it's going to be fascinating to see if he can come back from this surgery.
I like him fresh. He'll miss the French Open and turn up first up.
That's his goal.
At Wimbledon, like he did when he had that knee injury last time and was first up in the Aussie Open and tasted success.
And then didn't play really at all to Wimbledon, yeah.
Teething problems at Moorabbin.
You know they ran out of alcohol at Moorabbin last night?
Well, that's a good problem to have, in
well,
a way.
Kind of. They had the same, I think it was roughly the same amount of attendance, to the same number of crowd attendance. How do I put that? There's the same number of spectators at the ground as there was for the AFLW match.
But different crowds.
But three times the amount of alcohol was consumed. So they run out of alcohol. They had to get more delivered to Moorabbin. Yeah. Fascinating.
They might need the publican there, or not the publican, Greg Brick, but the football manager at the Buchan Football Netball Club, because he had to look after the bar there at the Buchan Races on Saturday, and they were believing that there might be three times the amount of people that's ever turned up to the races, and everyone was concerned that they would run out of alcohol. But
yeah, I don't think Simon Lefflin was behind the bar.
No, no. And I tell you what, I've jumped on the bandwagon. I'll never, ever speak lowly of him again. Daniel Ricciardo, he is our man. I wasn't having a crack at him, but I just hope that he has a great run and he can show off his class and ability in a car that actually works.
Absolutely. And he's finished third in qualifying, well, not qualifying, practice or testing in Barcelona overnight, which is a great result considering how much trouble he's had with that Renault car. So gone from seventh yesterday and he's clocked the third fastest lap there behind Lewis Hamilton this morning. So very promising signs for Ricciardo. Hopefully he can put himself into contention for maybe a world title. That would be wonderful.
Now, like this one, g'day Hawley. Josh Jenkins for Geelong. He might not kick 60 goals for the year, but will free up Hawkins and take the second or third best defender. Plus, can ruck in forward line. Might be a decent pick for them. I agree. He could be valuable.
Crunch time for Jenkins and Geelong, probably. That's that sort of trade.